Hey everyone, you're listening to episode 8 of Superhero Speak. Couple quick things. If you're listening to this episode, please take a moment and go to facebook.com/superheroespeak and like us. It's the best way to get in contact with us. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at superheroespeak.com. We'll be tweeting during recording sessions so you can get insight into upcoming episodes. This one is John, Ben, and I sitting down talking about a lot of different things. In particular, how are they going to introduce magic into the Marvel movie universe when they've avoided it for so long? Uh-oh, it's magic. Here we go. Okay, boys and girls. Do you want an official start? Because, Ben, you always seem to get confused when we don't have an official start.
I just want to know, I want to sort of have some way that we kick these off. And we just sort of just jump into things.
Bum-ba-da-da.
Well, go! It's kind of nice that we kind of, you know, start talking. And
sure, as long as we know what we're talking about.
Actually, tonight I actually want to start off with telling a story to all our listeners that you two are aware of already, but I want to share this with the world. So last night I'm watching TV with my son, and we happen to be watching Nickelodeon.
I don't want to hear about how you gave him the talk last night. Right?
No, it wasn't the talk. And a commercial for Iron Man 3 comes on, and his reaction was, "That's weird. I don't think that should be on Nickelodeon. TBS, but not Nickelodeon." And I went, "But buddy, that's the target audience. Kids, you're the target audience." And he went, "Huh. I thought it was adults who had no lives." So,
well, they do hit that market too.
Yes, yeah. So we are part of that market,
but that was a nice burn on his part.
Yes, which is
basically lumping you into that category.
Yeah, you know, and that was the whole thing. And it's like, well, he likes Iron Man, so I don't even understand where that connection in his brain came from.
Maybe from the Iron Man animated series that was on Nicktoons, or
well, no, but why he said, you know, for adults with no lives. So, yes, it was hurtful. And I guess it was also hurtful for anyone who watches TBS, because apparently
adults with no lives
watch TBS. So I apologize to all the TBS watchers and all the Iron Man fans out there, but apparently we're all adults with no lives.
You know what's going to happen now? All two of our listeners are going to come back with posts about all the good stuff that's actually on TBS.
Oh, well, you know, if you don't agree with that, yes.
I'm watching anything on TBS right now.
Yes, jump on our Facebook page and let us know everything you watch on TBS.
That's worthwhile.
I don't know, is there any original programming? I watch reruns of stuff.
I know they used to have some original programming. I assume they still do, but I don't know what they have right now. They have a lot of syndication of things.
Yeah, Big Bang Theory.
But I believe they do have some original series as well.
All right, then. So, now that I got that rant out of me today.
So on the topic of movie trailers.
Movie trailers. Oh, here we go.
So there's a lot of interesting things popping up in the news about upcoming movies and things like that. I've heard, and there's a lot of interesting rumors surrounding who's going to be showing up in some of these new movies.
So The Avengers 2. The newest rumor, I believe, was Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Those two, I think, have been officially confirmed as new members of the Avengers to be introduced. I assume we'll also see Falcon, because they're introducing him in Captain America 2.
But Falcon was never really officially an Avenger, I don't think.
I think it depends on what part of the canon you follow. He's in and out and involved in the team, so I think it's fine. Association.
He's almost like their Aquaman.
Well, sort of.
Hey, don't be dissing on Falcon. He's actually one of my favorite characters.
But it's an interesting. It brings up an interesting thing. And the other one, the most recent rumor I've heard, which is very conjecture-ish, is very rumor mill, is possibly seeing Black Panther. But I'm somewhat doubtful of that, because I think that's a character that requires a backstory of his own, you know, and apparently there are other sources that show that Black Panther is on the Marvel, you know, movie schedule, but probably not until after Avengers 2 would come out.
Yeah, and that's a shame because he is a good character. I mean, he deserves his own movie.
He is.
He's been a replacement in the Fantastic Four. He's been in the part of the Avengers. He hasn't been... I liked his take in the Ultimate cartoon, the Ultimate Avengers cartoon, where he was like, you know, this outsider came in. He didn't really work with them, but they went on...
Infiltrated
his way in. Like, that would be... That would make a decent plot line for the movie.
Yeah, it would. I could see that working. And I did enjoy that in the cartoon. My kids and I watched that cartoon a lot. And
I just read, though, that their priority is Doctor Strange, right?
Well, yeah, there's other properties they have ahead of that. Doctor Strange is on the docket. There's test footage for an Ant-Man possible movie on the horizon.
Can I just say that if they are actually literally going to do Ant-Man, Marvel has officially kicked DC's ass. DC has been trying to get, like, a Wonder Woman movie for over a decade.
Right, Wonder Woman movie and TV shows, and have been flailing at it forever.
The only person who's been able to do it is Bruce Timm, and, you know, and that's only animation. They've lost. DC is just completely lost.
But I wonder if it's Warner Brothers is afraid to pull the trigger on some of the things. Because, like, one of the things, when I listen to Fat Man on Batman, that he talks about a lot, when he got into movie making, everyone knows Kevin Smith was slated to do a Superman movie in the 90s, right?
Right.
Like, everyone knows about this.
Oh, yeah, and what's his name was going to be Superman.
Nicolas Cage.
And it was going to be a dark, weird kind of psychedelic Superman.
He actually named his son Kal-El.
Right.
Because of that affiliation, and then that's sort of a non sequitur now, since he had never actually played.
I saw a picture of him in Nicolas Cage in the suit uncracked, and it was weird.
Yes. Because he had the long hair but he was balding, and it's just that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But one of the things he talked about was when he was doing when they approached him to do the movie, and they were talking about it. He went, "Oh, well, this is great and everything, but you have a whole treasure trove of writers over at DC that could do justice to this character a lot more than I could." And the attitude was, "Well, they're the comic book guys, and this is movie, and we don't mix the two." And you hear that it's getting better, but it seems like it's getting better on the Marvel side, because Marvel owns, it's one company, they own the movies, they're doing it themselves. And you kind of get the feeling like there really aren't comic book guys involved as much with the DC Warner Brothers movies.
Yeah, and I think also because of that DC Warner Brothers paradigm, I think creates some disconnect there. That Warner Brothers is not looking at it holistically. They're looking at it from, you know, what profitable next piece can we make out of this from this association that we have, and are like culling that like a creative mill, but not actually really thinking about the broader universe of things. Whereas Marvel is very keen to creating a universe and have outlined phases to how this universe gets built.
Right.
And that's, I think, key to the quality of the movies we've seen in the past couple of years. You know, with the build-up of Iron Man and Thor and Captain America, and then the success of the Avengers movie bringing them all together.
But there was another article I read that said that is not quite sustainable. It goes in, they said, it was talking about shifts of good and bad. So you get one good director, like Sam Raimi, who does a really good Spider-Man movie, and then you get Nolan doing Batman.
Right.
And then the studios are like, they take a chance, they make a lot of money, they look at this, go, "Oh, that's great." And then the next one comes out, and the studio gets, the more studio executives get involved, and then the next one comes out, more studio executives get involved, until the studio executives are the ones that are, you know, basically telling them what the script is going
to
be.
Become a quagmire.
So if Marvel can stave that off, you know, they can have a firewall between their writers, who are doing pretty good, and, you know, and the execs who see all they see is a cash cow, then, you know.
I think part of what helps them in that is the fact that most of those execs are the same execs who are involved and aware of the comic book end of those things. So they're fans themselves.
Right.
So they're not just looking for, you know, how this is going to pay off and how this is going to be successful. They're also looking at how this is going to be quality work. They are cognizant of that. And I think that, you know, Marvel, you know, and hopefully with the influence of Disney, understands that that's important to the continued success here. I do think there is a sustainability problem in the long run of this being a franchise that eventually, you know, you're not gonna be able to use the same people forever to continue this franchise. And there's already some level of that drama happening now where Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. is vying for some more money, you know, to continue being Tony Stark. And, you know, I don't really have an opinion on the matter right now, because I haven't really read that much about it, and I don't want to, you know, go on hearsay and small amounts that I've read. But it's going to be a problem if they're using these well-known faces in these roles, that eventually those sorts of things are going to build up. And they're going to have to be able to more gracefully make substitutions in a way that, A, doesn't feel like what they did with Rhodey in the second Iron Man movie, where they didn't want to pay him more money, so let's just swap him out. And B, carries the continuity well in a way that's plausible and believable, you know, for the fans.
And although the amount of money, they keep trying to up the amount of money they get for these movies, and it gets to a certain point where it gets kind of ridiculous.
Well, it's always been a one-upmanship game. I mean, you know, Spider-Man did that. Every single one of these franchises, they want to hit those, you know, record box office opens. But at the same time, you know, I think that they're not doing it to the extent of, you know, being the Titanic, and that there's like, we are going to spend, you know, billions of dollars on this movie because we're going to hit these records, you know, and it'll pay for itself. They're still being grounded in that and trying to keep it, you know, within a budget that makes sense, and, you know, things like that that I think are important.
Yeah, and I mean, to go back to the Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. thing, I mean, that can also be Hollywood hype, in the sense of, you know, he made comments about his contract being up, and, you know,
I think... Yeah, but actually, recently his lawyer said that he was in negotiations to renegotiating his contract.
Right, but renegotiating his contract doesn't mean he's saying, I want more money. It just means,
true,
my contract's up. Maybe it just means I want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And is it still profitable for me?
Right.
You know? But yeah, and it's right, because it's like, you can almost say Avengers was the climax to the whole thing, to the whole superhero movie genre, where it's like, it was this build up. Now we have this multi-hero movie, big budget, giant, bigger than life adventure, and it's cool, but it's like, now can they keep that going? Because that builds a huge momentum.
Well, I think yes, I agree, but I think the momentum they built was, yes, it was a climactic, but it's a climax to the introduction of this world.
Right.
It's like, here's the universe we're presenting. Here's everything we want to start out showing you as what this world looks like. And now, from this point forward, this is story building.
Right,
and this is expansion of that universe and that.
Right, and I think Marvel probably has, I mean, they keep talking about, they have at least to the end of Avengers 2, which is Phase 2, planned out.
Right.
So I don't see there being an issue with them coming out with poor movies at this point. But it does, then on the other side of the coin, it feels like Warner Brothers DC is playing catch up to them, and they're talking about, oh, well, we'll come out with a Justice League movie and then build individual movies around that.
Yeah.
And
doesn't really work.
I think,
like that.
Yeah. Well, I think, though, that the, you know, while they are, you know, sort of falling behind, I think the one thing they have in their, DC has in their favor, is the fact that this isn't like the console wars. It's not like there are people out there, it's like, Marvel beat you to it, so I'm not going to watch your movies. So, you know, if DC does, and Warner Brothers do work these things out, and figure out a plan forward that makes sense, those movies could be good, and we're going to watch them, and we're going to, you know, pay our $10 to get our 3D glasses and enjoy it on the big screen. So there's still potential for success there if they get their act together.
And I'll still be watching the movies a week after you guys.
Wow.
As should be the case.
You know, and that's another thing. It's getting harder. There's so many, in my opinion, being the geek that I am, there's so many good movies anymore. It's like, I really have to pick and choose.
Yeah, you do.
It's gotten so expensive, you can't go to every movie anymore.
Absolutely. And I actually was having this conversation with my daughter last week. Last weekend, I took her to see Star Trek Into Darkness at the theater. And, you know, it was just her and I, and we enjoyed it. We went to the movie tavern.
Right.
And so we, you know, paid, you know, 3D movie costs, and then on top of that, a meal. You know,
right.
Had lunch there. And as we were leaving, she was asking us, like, so when is, she knew Epic was coming out soon, the new anime.
Right,
movie.
Yes.
And she asked about that. I was like, well, I think it's coming out next weekend. And she's like, oh, so we'll be going to that next weekend? I was like, well, let's think that over, because I think we need to pick and choose which things we go see in the
right.
theater, because it gets expensive. You know, you like, just that, it was $25 for the two of us for the tickets, because I paid ahead online.
Right.
And it was like $40 for the food.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's...
You know, they've got Man of
Steel. And that's just for two people. You know, if my whole family had gone, it would have been even more expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas some of these movies, if you wait, I can watch it on demand for $6.
Or on Netflix.
In my house.
You yeah, know, I mean...
If I wait that long, yeah, on Netflix.
Well, no,
free.
It's right. It wasn't that long. I mean, they have Thor and Captain America on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, it was at least a year, I want to say, after they were in the theater.
Maybe not so much a year, but even that is a lot shorter of a time than...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you'd know
right. Whereas I can wait a month and pay $6 and watch it in my house with a pizza.
Yeah.
And,
right, right. Yeah, I mean...
A $6 pizza.
I actually own a projector with a 9-foot screen in my living room because... It was getting too expensive to go to the movies
yeah.
at the time, and I still can experience the big screen, but now it's like, ooh, wait a minute, I really want to see this in the theater.
Right, so that's why, and my daughter understood that, and she actually agreed that that's, like, Epic is one she's willing to wait for it to come out
yes.
and see it at home, and I'm glad of it. We'll have a fight there.
But, so,
but Man of Steel we will be seeing in the theater. There is no doubt about that one.
Yeah, some of them you just want to see in 3D, and I, as
right.
much as... Yeah, they've got all the 3D TVs coming out, but...
Yeah, I'm not spending money on those.
Nah,
yeah.
not yet.
That's as much as I enjoy the 3D experience, immersive experience in the theater, I think the 3D TV seems like it's a marketing gimmick. There's not nearly enough programming out there right now to support it.
Right.
And from a hardware standpoint, like, these expensive glasses that you have
yeah.
to use
yeah.
that require batteries... And, you know, I have kids, things get lost and broken constantly. I am not going to pay, you know, $50 every time I need a new pair of glasses.
Right.
You know, because they lost them or stepped on them or something like
well,
that.
Well, and that's another thing, like, why are the glasses for home so expensive? Like, why can't I just, you know, take a couple extra ones when I can see the 3D
right.
movie in the
it's
theater?
Not the same technology.
Exactly.
And they need to get on parity with that.
Well... They're not, because they're making money off the glasses sales.
Right.
So, and speaking of TVs, we can segue into TV news.
And Marvel.
And Marvel still. Yes.
Yes, I'd like to say... can I start this off?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to say that the new season of Heroes is looking very promising. they've introduced a government agency that's going after them now. So, yeah, this might finally work out.
Stop watching Netflix.
So... Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Officially coming out this fall.
A.K.A. Heroes the way it should have been.
Perhaps. But yeah, I think from everything I've seen, it looks really promising and really awesome.
Yeah.
I love that they're bringing back Coulson. At this point, just from seeing the previews, I don't care how they're bringing back Coulson. I mean, I'm sure they'll have a story around it.
Right.
As to how he survived the events of the Avengers, but... Honestly, it's just, I'm glad that Coulson's coming back. He is a great character that they've created in
yes.
the Marvel Universe.
And he did, the same actor does the voiceovers for, was it the Spider-Man Extreme or whatever it is?
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
So, you know, he's
I don't think they're going to keep that in canon, though. Him being a principal.
No.
As a side job.
No, so. And... You know, I mean, I'm sure everyone who is listening to this has seen the previews for it. If not, pause this right now, look it up.
It's on our Facebook page.
There you go. There's a link on our Facebook page, thanks to Ben. Check it out. There was an IO9 article that broke it
down
like
scene
by scene.
Because a lot of it goes by pretty fast. It's easy to miss what's going on in there.
Like Luke Cage?
Well, I'm going to say...
Actually,
Yeah. for those who haven't seen it yet, or those who have seen it, there's a character in there a lot of people are speculating is Luke Cage and Marvel.
Right, which is a Whedon alum. You know, he was in an Angel, and I want to say he had a brief part in Dollhouse at one point, possibly.
He did.
But, you know, he was gone in Angel, you know, so, you know, J. August, I forget his last name now. But, you know, if you watched Angel, he was the big, bald, black guy. And he's coming back in this as supposedly some sort of hero. You see a scene where he's jumping out of a window. I'm aware.
Okay. Thank you.
Jumping out of a window, saving someone, and landing on the street without being injured by it. Yes, there's a lot of speculation that he might be Luke Cage, but I think that there's valid argument that he isn't, and I think they've already also denied it. There's, and I think one eagle-eyed viewer of the trailer might have picked up better evidence as to who the character is, in that, you know how every single Marvel movie, they have that Marvel logo that is the comic flip of flipping red pages,
they
always have, like, it's always character-specific. So, like, with Thor, it was all Thor's images. With Captain America, it was all Spider-Man. Captain America-related, and Iron Man, and so on. With this one that they had for the Avengers, or for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, there was a couple of scenes in there where they showed this character, a Marvel character named Rage. It's a lesser-known, you know, B-level character, but is very similar, like, this strength and invulnerability type abilities, and he's a hero that was this, you know, black kid who lived in, you know, poor neighborhood, and some event occurred where he gained these super abilities and decided to use them for good. He was affiliated with some team, but I can't remember what it is. But there's a good chance that is the character he's playing.
And
or some form of it.
And the other interesting point that was brought up is someone said, "Well, what about, you know, Wolverine and Spider-Man and those characters?" And, you know, people go, "Oh, well, Sony
right, because they only own the movie rights,
not the TV
they don't
rights,
own the television rights."
Marvel owns the TV rights.
It is a valid, I think it's a valid question, and obviously you see those characters depicted as already in other cartoons.
Right.
So obviously Marvel does have the rights to depict those characters mm-hmm. on television. So it would be interesting to see that crossover happen, but I personally am skeptical.
Well, and what's interesting when you think about it this way is they own the TV rights, not the movie rights. But this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is definitely going to tie into their cinematic universe, right? Coulson.
Yes.
It's going to be S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, they're not going
to. Right. So they're creating a canon that's unified between the movie properties and the television show.
Right. The thought comes in my mind is like, okay, well, they'll have Wolverine in an episode, and even if they get Hugh Jackman to play him,
you know, that episode's going to be, though. It's going to be Coulson walking into a bar and, you know, and Wolverine turning around and telling him to go away, go bleep himself. Perfect cameo.
That would be nice.
We could have that in every movie.
Yeah.
Until the Wolverine movie.
Yes. Okay, he's in an episode, something happens, but then in the movie, they have to act like he doesn't exist because they don't have a movie right to him.
Right, I think that's one of the issues that they'd be up against, is if they introduce one of those characters in the TV show, that's now canon.
Right.
So if they do eventually get the movie rights back for Wolverine,
right,
and they decide, all right, now that we have this back, let's reboot this and make this, you know, part of our new Marvel universe.
Right.
If they went and introduced him in the TV show, they'd have to retcon that somehow.
Right.
Or you know, make that work somehow.
Well, they are doing a sequel to X-Men First Class, aren't they?
Marvel isn't. That's is that Sony or is that Fox?
Fox.
So, you know, Fox has all the X-Men movie rights right now, and they're the ones who are responsible for all the for the X-Men movies, the X-Men First Class, and the Wolverine spin-off movies.
Somebody good must be in charge because First Class was
a First Class movie.
Right.
And I don't know if this guy agrees with that.
Well, if you look at the he/she for it, there's a lot of black holes in
it. Well, yeah, and I don't know. I have issue with how they did it, but a lot of people like the movie, so I'm just gonna stay quiet for now. You know. And they're doing a first class part two, or they're just doing
They're doing Days of Future Past, which is supposed to be a continuation of First Class and continue with those characters, but also introduce the future state versions of the characters as well. So whereas you'll see whatever the guy's name is who played Professor Xavier in First Class, you'll also see Patrick Stewart playing Professor Xavier.
Yeah, no, they've said that. And with Magneto.
With Magneto and all the other characters, you'll see the old and young versions of many of these characters.
Right. Which is interesting.
An older version of Kitty Pryde, if I remember the story correctly, she's the one who comes back in time.
Right. If they keep to the original storyline.
Yeah.
Last thing I read said they were going to be as... Well, how could you mess with it? That's like one of the best graphic novels that they've got.
Well, I think that they...
It's supposed to be.
But it's also movie people.
But at the same time, you're talking about in the movies. They're at liberty to do whatever they want. So they could be using the name and using a bunch of the characters, but could completely come up with their own version of the story.
Yeah.
So. Some argue that the Phoenix Saga was one of the best X-Men stories ever written, and look what we got in X-Men Last Stand.
Yeah.
So, I'm just putting that out there. You can agree or disagree.
Sometimes the melodrama that plays out on the pages doesn't work quite so well on the screen. So, and it doesn't always get interpreted as well. But anyway,
I digress.
As long as we're talking about TV, though, I think one thing that I'd like to mention that we haven't talked about, and I think it's
worthwhile,
is and one thing that DC and Warner Brothers are doing that is good is the Arrow TV series. I think I'm really enjoying the way that that's playing out. The depiction of Oliver Queen that they have laid out in that, the world that they're building within that. It's definitely a departure from any recognizable version of Green Arrow from the comics, as well as a departure from how they illustrated him in Smallville.
Right.
They definitely took a different, very gritty,
total left turn.
Very Christopher Nolan-esque type.
More reality-based.
That world, and very grounded, and you don't have any of the magical or, super, meta-human type characters at all. It's all normal humans with weapons.
Yes, and, which is interesting. I don't know how long they're going to be able to keep it going.
Yeah, you may see that shift over time, but we'll see.
The Smallville mantra was no capes, and so they had superheroes and whatnot, but they were still in like street clothes. They might be the same color scheme as their costumes, but they were still.
They got through an entire season, and they managed not to introduce any characters who were, enhanced in any way, other than through their own training and skill.
Which brings up actually two interesting points, because the season finale. John hasn't seen it.
Go ahead. I'm gonna watch it.
Well, I'll just say that there's a very large scale, over the top thing that happens in the season.
Say it. Spoilers, people.
The main villain from season one ends up activating an earthquake machine that destroys like a whole big part of the city.
Right, and the Blades, which is the Arrow version of
the ghetto.
Whatever, didn't there was in the Batman movies, there was that type of section of town.
Yeah, the,
what it was called.
What did they call that in the...
Anyway.
The Narrows.
The Narrows.
Yeah, it was the Narrows in the Batman movies.
Right.
And there was, there's a whole thing like the main villain is this head of industry, and he wants to get rid of that and rebuild it. That part of the city and everything, and so he comes up with this earthquake machine, and
he sees them as a scourge on progress, the progressiveness of the city.
Right, and in the show you think, oh, they've stopped it, they've saved the day, and lo and behold,
you've got a backup.
He has a backup. Always have a backup is basically what his line is, and the second machine goes off, and the episode
ensues.
Destruction ensues. I mean, that's basically where the episode ends. So it's kind of leaving you hanging for next season.
Right.
And it's like, okay.
Some people get saved.
Some people get saved.
Some people not saved.
So how is, you know, how is the Green Arrow, who they actually just call the Hood in the show?
Right, he's a vigilante. He's known as the Hood. And most of the season, there's been chief of police or head detective in the police force who also happens to be Dinah Lance's father. It is constantly on the hunt for this vigilante because, you know, while he may be doling out some level of justice, he's doing it outside of the law.
Right.
And that's another character development that I thought they did pretty well across the course of the season, where he's, you know, he started out in a very staunch, you know, black and white view on these things and has allowed himself to grow and change his viewpoint over time. And especially towards the end.
Right, and the actor who plays that character is Paul Blackthorne.
Ooh, right.
Who some people might know played Harry Dresden in the short-lived Dresden Files TV series.
Yes. For those who don't disavow its knowledge, yes.
Yes. Yeah, if you treat it as a standalone thing that's not in canon with the books.
Sure.
It wasn't bad.
It was following the canon loosely. They were working their way up.
It was very loosely, and a lot of the books hadn't yet been written, so there wasn't a lot of canon to go on.
But the depiction of Bob was really good.
That I thought they did pretty well. And I watched the series before I read a single book. And in that form, I really enjoyed the TV show.
Right.
And then I started reading the books. And then my enjoyment of the TV show decreased, you know, in hindsight.
Right,
as
right.
It was like, the show was okay, but these books are better. And
well,
the beginning,
I mean,
that
when
show
it,
is not these books.
When you read all the articles around the show, it was like, they went in wanting to do it justice to the books. However, they're like, well, TV's more of a visual thing, so the Blue Beetle got changed to a Jeep because it was easier to film with the Jeep.
I thought it was a size issue that he couldn't get in and out of a Beetle.
Yeah.
Well, I heard that as well, but I mean, I think the official thing was it was better for filming. They felt I don't know, for some reason they felt the hockey stick was better visually than his staff.
And I didn't even realize until like partway through the season that that was his role of that play.
Yeah.
That and also he had a drumstick that was essentially a wand.
Right, right. And then he did
the lack of the duster.
Yeah. So, I mean, which are all key elements from the books. That
I mean, I think you could do some of those substitutions without too much difficulty, but the duster is quintessential.
But you could also have, because like you said, things weren't written yet. They could have built to and explained, like they could have brought the duster in and explained it. They could have brought the wand, the blasting rod in and explained it. However, they didn't. And the other issue, I think, is if they did that, then Jim Butcher would have been stuck making that canon in his books.
And he has
since written small stories that take place before Stormfront that explain where some of these things have come from.
For anybody who doesn't understand what we're talking about, the Dresden Files are written by Jim Butcher.
There's a series of 14 books. So
14
far.
Books and a couple of novellas, several small.
Right, there's a bunch of short stories that fit in between. There's 14 books total, and there's actually an anthology of the short stories as a separate book as well.
Definitely worth checking out.
And I believe the plan is that he's planning on doing about 23 books.
With the last three being
like
apocalyptic
trilogy,
which he's definitely headed in that direction.
Definitely with the last book he set that up pretty well.
But back on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., love going off on tangents.
Actually, we were talking about Arrow last.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You're right. We were speaking about.
Yeah.
Back on Arrow. Yeah. So it's if you're not watching it, I think, John, you really should you really should jump up on it.
I'm too busy searching for new episodes of Continuum on YouTube. Nobody's uploaded the sixth episode yet.
Poor John.
Season two to Sci-Fi in like less than a month.
Yes, coming to, not here now. I already found the other episodes for season two on YouTube, so.
No,
I have excuses, good excuses.
Very well.
Well, you think they're good excuses.
Hey, have you seen Continuum? It's pretty nice.
It is a really good show.
Yeah.
I've seen the whole first season, but I've been patient for the second season.
Yeah.
I've gotten other things to watch in the meantime, such as Arrow.
Yes, well, I'll watch that while I'm watching Sherlock.
Sherlock is a good show, too.
Yes.
That is a great show. And actually, I was talking to Dave earlier today about another show that I've been watching that's proven to be pretty well.
Yeah, I think I'm going to check it out. Go ahead.
It's a show that's on BBC America and follows Doctor Who. It's called Orphan Black. Have you heard about it?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's I don't know if it really fits the genre of stuff that we typically talk about, but I really enjoyed the show. It's what's interesting about it is they have this one actress who plays all these different
clones,
these different versions of her that exist, and the characterizations are very clearly delineated between these different versions of her. It's not as if she's basically playing six of her. They're very different characters from each other. You know, the nature of their upbringing is, you know, clearly has shaped their personalities differently, and she manages to play all these different variations very well, in that you forget sometimes that it's one actress playing all these parts.
Nice.
The actress's name is Tatiana Maslany.
Maslany, I think.
Maslany. Okay, there you go. Yes. So, you know, Ben, you're talking her up, so she must be a very good actress, or she's hot, one or the other.
Can't she be both?
Well, she could be both. No, but I mean, it sounds like a very interesting storyline, and I'm going to check it out.
The show is somewhat adult-oriented. I would be cautious about showing this to younger viewers. I would say I think it's rated TVMA, and it is rightly so.
There's a little bit of wow, go wow, wow.
A little bit.
Oh, well, there you go.
Only when they go back to the 70s, I guess.
Well, yeah. Not auditorially, but the spirit of it is there.
Oh, my God.
But no, there's some, they really, you know, test the limits of what's acceptable levels of nudity sometimes in the show.
Oh, well, so wait, then I better go check it out tonight.
There you go.
It is BBC.
Yeah. But it's BBC America. So
damn.
They still have to comply with
damn Americans.
American.
It still leaves
standards.
Doctor Who with the highest body count of any series.
True.
All right, so.
Oh, they destroyed the universe a few times, so you don't get much higher than that.
All right.
So I think we can move on.
I think we can move on, fine.
Do you have anything to discuss about the comic book?
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about, now unfortunately it's going back a couple weeks ago, that there was an article on Bleeding Cool, which is basically, is the end of the comics world coming up? And the article is called The End of the Comics World is Nigh. It's on bleedingcool.com. I'm not going to go into extreme detail. You can go, it's still up there. You can go check it out. I'll put a link on our Facebook page to it. But they're saying, you know, the numbers are really down, and the comic book industry is hurting itself, and basically it's going to come to an end. And some of the points they bring up, I agree with. Some of them, I don't agree with.
Well, yeah, and I think I read that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
someone else had noted that at some point, I ended up reading that.
Well, Joe Quesada had tweeted at the article. That's how I found out about it. And he, and for those who don't know, Joe Quesada was the editor-in-chief for a while for Marvel Comics. But anyway, and he said it's just a bunch of BS. Because
I think that article would have been accurate 5 years ago. And I think that they're being blind to a lot of the shifts that are already in place. You know, that so they talk about, you know, the digital marketplace. They talk about how they need to be more proactive about embracing their digital readers.
Right.
But they are, you know, especially Marvel. Marvel has, you know, has this whole new Marvel Unlimited app and subscription model where you can have access to a lot of their digital stuff at a flat subscription fee rather than at a per issue fee.
You mean I don't have to collect all four foil custom
Yes.
You know, you still have the collection of 60 different comics now, in order to see the whole thing.
Exactly. You can get these whole story arcs already aggregated for you and read through them, you know, digitally on your iPad or on your computer or wherever. Through, you know, just subscribing.
Right. I mean, now, I'm a collector, so to me it's like I want to still own the physical book.
Sure, and that's fine. And
but,
not killing that model.
Right. And they're not. And there's been a lot of talk because one of the things that actually Jim Lee, who is one of the co-editors over at DC right now, and for those who don't know, Jim Lee is also a very famous artist. He worked on X-Men in the 90s, went off, formed Image Comics, and then then his imprint at Image got bought out by DC, and then he became one of their co-editor-in-chiefs over at DC. So he knows what he's talking about. And one of his the area he works in over at DC right now is the digital. And they did recognize that. And they did say what happens is, okay, Batman 353 comes out, and they charge the same price when they come out, digital or physical copy.
Right.
And forever they were charging the same price on the digital, even though now in a comic book shop, the physical one goes into the back bin and sometimes ends up being $1.
Yeah.
So now what they're doing is, I believe the price point is $2.99 for books right now. After they're saying, I think it's, yeah, after 30 days, they cut it down to $1.99. On the digital, which exactly, so they are recognizing
that pricing model happening. That's not,
right.
It's been going on for a little while now.
But along with the pricing model, because that's one of the points in this article. Stop charging so much. One of the most interesting things I've heard about the pricing on comic books, because people said, "Oh, comic books were 10, 25, 60 cents forever," and then all of a sudden in the 90s, the prices started jumping. Well, actually, late 80s, 90s, the prices started jumping up. And one thing that a lot of people did not notice is that the prices stayed the same for a really long time, but the number of pages started going down.
Mm.
And that's,
yeah, they do feel light nowadays.
Well,
the length, there's a lot less content.
Right, but the point was that they were trying to keep the price down, so they said, okay, we'll cut two pages out. We'll cut, you know. So I think when they got down to, I think a standard issue is 24 pages now.
Mm-hmm.
When they got down to that number, they said, okay, we can't cut any more out, and the only way we can make back the revenue is by upping the price at this point.
Right.
And, you know, they got to do what they got
to
do.
Yeah, I mean, it's can't adhere to a model where the prices always stay at a certain level. I mean, the Postal Service is an example of that.
Right.
Prices keep going up and up, and even as they go up, they're still struggling with budgetary constraints. Okay. So it's...
Well, you know, and
inflation happens.
And the other thing,
unfortunately, it's true. And so we, you know, should expect that these sorts of prices are going to go up, and they're going to increase over time at a reasonable rate you know, for these companies to stay profitable.
I would hope that the digital model, though, because the biggest price, the biggest cost to them has got to be the printing, because we're not talking like for books. Printing is not
costly
because it's black
and
white, but for comics...
For digital, there's no printing involved. You're basically putting a file up.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just printing. It's also
created digitally.
It's also distribution.
Well, yeah. And
it's getting the books into the stores.
Right.
That's very costly. And, you know, having somebody who worked in the publishing industry, you know, publishers make their money off of advertising. But the publishing industry has been dying for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
That's another thing I've noticed in newer books. There's less advertising in there because in the 90s, the 80s and the 90s, they probably had a target audience of, let's say, 1 million readers on a particular issue. You know, now they say the numbers are around, I believe on some of the better ones, it's like 200,000 and then below. So it's like, okay, so if they have less readers, the advertisers going, well, I'm hitting less people, so I don't want to advertise in your book. The other thing is, you know, because of cost, they have to charge more for advertising, so they can't justify that when they have less readers than they used to.
Well, yeah, but that article did say that part of the reason why you got so few readers is because, okay, I want to read X-Men. Well, which of the 5 to 10
now
that's a legitimate issue.
Yes,
the fact that there are so many different titles it does pollute the pool of things. Because, yeah, you have the Uncanny X-Men, and you have the, you know...
Now just X-Men.
Just X-Men. And now there's, like, the Avenging X-Men.
Yes. X-Men versus Avengers.
Yeah, and all these different
and
disparate
then
titles.
There's Avengers, New Avengers, Dark Avengers, Brothers Avengers.
No, right, and X-Factor, and, you know, whatever other X titles they came up with. Like, there's so many spin-offs and variants from the original titles that it's just gotten too wide.
Right.
And this, if they cut down on the number, they probably wind up with a lot better storylines, because it's the same thing with, like, series TV in America and series TV in Europe, where a series here is 23 episodes, but a series there is 10 to 13. You wind up with a much more focused, much better storyline, much better storytelling,
right,
because you're taking
nice,
the cream of the crop.
Line, yeah.
So instead, you've got...
You don't have all these episodes that you're trying to fit in between to make this season... You know, to fill the season.
And I think you can also liken it to the video game industry, and a lot of people made this argument, I'll say the early 2000s, is that the video game market got flooded with lots and lots of games, and just because there's more choice doesn't mean it's better choice. You have, you know, a game company coming out with five games as opposed to spending time on one really good game.
Yeah.
And that's so true. It's like, you know, the new 52, like, okay, it did well when it launched, but a lot of it, my personal belief is because they restarted the numbering, so everyone was like, "Ooh, I got to get number one again," you know.
Yeah.
And then some of the storylines were good, and people read on. I mean, they started the new numbering started with the Court of Owls for Batman, and for those who have not read it, run out now and read it because it's an amazing Batman storyline. Basically, it's not the Joker, it's not Penguin, it's a new villain. They took canon that people believed for years and were able to build something new within it, and it's just really well written. And they tied that in with all the new launch. And, you know, okay, so those books, I'm sure they sold well because they were well written, but, you know, but did they need to do 52 books? You know?
Right.
I mean, yes, they needed a Batman, they needed a Superman, they needed an Aquaman.
Yeah, I didn't even realize they did 52 books. I assumed the new 52 meant 52 weeks, like the new year.
Exactly.
Books.
And it's funny because Jim Lee also talked about this on Batman on Batman, where he was like, well, the number I came up with, because they did the, there was a story called 52 where they did a weekly book.
Yeah.
And they had lost a year in the life of all the heroes, and they were explaining what happened in that year, and they did it as a weekly book. So his philosophy was like, well, 52 is a lucky number for us. But I think in a world where your readership has gone down, you don't want to flood people with 52.
No, you don't need 52 different books.
Right.
There aren't 52 legitimate characters to focus on.
Right.
And that means that at least some quantity of those are various books on the same characters, which, as we just discussed, it's complicated.
Well, I'm sure now, you could have separate issues of Plastic Man and Elastic Man. You know?
Now, okay, I will say this, too. I have friends who are writers and artists. Please don't get pissed off at this. Because the argument can also be, well, you're going to put guys out of work, but also... My understanding, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, please comment on our Facebook page, that you're contracted out. No one works for Marvel anymore. No one works for DC anymore.
Right,
they're contracted by them to do work. Right. So what it really comes down to is whoever's doing the better quality work is going to...
The people they're going to retain and keep using. And
right.
When you pare it down, you stick with the quality when you reduce the quantity.
Right.
And so what you're dropping out, hopefully, if they're doing it the right way, is the lower quality artwork and writing that they don't really need to be part of their catalog anyway.
Right. And then you have the same issue at Marvel. There's probably too many books per character.
Most of the examples we gave were Marvel books before with the X-Men and Avenger titles.
I mean, I think the only one...
Various Spider-Man titles.
Well, the thing is, like...
An entire Ultimate Universe...
Well, we won't go into Bendis's ego trip, but no. What they did with Spider-Man was they had, I mean, because at one point there was Web of, Spectacular, Amazing, and just Spider-Man, and then they cut back on all the titles. Oh, and
they did cut back.
So they cut back on the titles, and then they ended up, they were for a while, they were doing 3 issues a month with him.
Yeah.
And then they cut back on that, then they cut back on that as well, because I have to imagine for the writers and artists it was just too much.
I'm sure it was hectic.
Yeah.
And they'd have to be writing a lot of that simultaneously and knowing, all right, I'm writing issue 503 and you're writing issue 504. This is what's going to be happening at the end of 503.
Right.
So you know what to be drawing for the next issue that is happening concurrently.
But the one thing Marvel's doing, DC does this as well, and you know they're both guilty. I mean, we talked about the 52 storyline.
Yeah.
But Marvel, I feel, is worse in this court is these giant overarching storylines.
Right.
That they keep hitting
so
us
many
with.
Different books. Yes. That it's it is. I mean, I've only read a handful of them, and most of them I have to say I'll admit that I read them digitally and didn't necessarily pay for all of them, but this was a long time ago when I wasn't necessarily as actively engaged, and didn't really think about the consequences. But like the House of M and Civil War, you know, are among those. And I read through them. I read through all the different books and absorbed all that stuff and had a checklist, so I read them in the right order.
Right.
But you know, I don't know how people do that without that. Like, I don't know how someone can read one of these story arcs without initially having some sort of checklist
right.
to go against. And it got to the point, like what I recall with the Civil War issues, they started putting that checklist in the books. So these are all the titles you should have read before reading this,
yes.
and these are all the ones to follow what you're reading right now.
Right.
And I understand from a marketing standpoint why they do that sort of thing, but it doesn't really work. I think there's only a small handful of people that are dedicated enough to spend the time and money to read all of those titles across all of to get the complete story. But a lot of people are just going to abandon it. A lot of people are going to say, all right, well, this I only care about Spider-Man and what's going on with Spider-Man. And, you know, if you're going to go take the story in this other direction for 10 issues, maybe I'll just skip these 10 issues and pick
right.
it back up after it's done.
No, I mean, that's true. I mean, I think I've told Ben, I'm sure I've said this to John, too. It's like Civil War sucked me back into collecting. I had gotten out of it for, you know, a long time, got married.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't cool to collect comic books anymore when I was trying to date women. No, nerds are cool now. Sorry. And I got out of it. I would pick up an issue here and there, going to conventions, but not seriously into it. And then Civil War came out. Just the idea of it really drew me in. And if you don't know what Civil War is and you're listening to this podcast, just I don't know what to tell you. Don't go away. Just go read it.
That's what I meant. Go away and read it.
Get a subscription.
And then come back.
So it's basically something happens and it's the heroes are fighting each other. Hence Civil War. And so it was a good, you know, really great storyline. It got me back into collecting. And then I was collecting Spider-Man again. And I think right after Civil War, they did the Planet Hulk.
Yeah, they had. Well, Planet Hulk was technically sort of concurrent. It was a side story because the whole Civil War story itself, Hulk was nowhere to be found. And that's only because, you know, the Illuminati, which constituted Professor Xavier, Reed Richards, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, I believe, and Tony Stark. And Tony Stark.
They burst him off the planet.
Black Bolt. They basically said, well, you know, we see this coming down the pike, that this event is going to come, you know, not necessarily seeing necessarily that there was going to cause, you know, a rift, but knowing that if this Registration Act came forth, that the Hulk was going to be a huge monkey wrench in it, actually,
right.
You know, working successfully. So they sort of convinced him to get on a spaceship, to send him to some nice, pretty garden planet to live out his days, but it went off course and landed on some battle planet instead. So they had the Planet Hulk arc follow that,
right.
of him becoming, essentially being a gladiator amongst warriors, and eventually becoming king of that planet. And then World War Hulk is him coming back to Earth
and he's pissed.
And being pissed off at the Illuminati for some reason.
The Hulk
away
is
in the
pissed. That was stretching a bit.
Yeah.
No, but.
So unrealistic.
Anyway.
The cartoon movie about that was pretty good.
I've seen it on Netflix, so I haven't.
It was good. Yeah. It was actually well done.
Yeah, I mean, the point I was getting to, and then there was the Dark Avengers storyline, and there's like all these huge overarching storylines, and it just became too much. I was just like, I can't do this.
And they started overlapping, so like one wouldn't even be done yet, and the next one would start to be,
right,
you know,
the
kernels of that was
going. You want to know what happened now? Go back in a month and get this one.
And so now, like,
but with the House of M pretty much rolled right into the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And the Civil War, you know, World War Hulk was on the tail of it.
Right.
And then, you know, by the end of World War Hulk, you already saw all the Skrull invasion starting to
happen. Oh, that's
happen.
Right. I completely forgot about the Skrull invasion. Secret invasion.
You know, and then that story arc kept, you know. And I started reading that. I got about halfway through Secret Invasion before I just had to throw my hands up over it because it was just too many things to keep track of.
And it's one of those things where, like, now, if I'm really interested in reading it, I'll go and buy the graphic novel, but
yeah.
It's hard to keep up with book by book. The only one I was still subscribed to until the end was Amazing Spider-Man, and then they ruined that.
And then they killed him.
like, really, guys, come on. Like, it's enough's enough. Let's go back. Doc Ock is not Spider-Man.
You mean you're not a fan of Superior Spider-Man?
I am not a fan of Superior Spider-Man. I mean, some of the things he's done is cool, you know, like, because, but it also bothers me, because they're trying to show Octavius's intellect now in Spider-Man,
right.
Where, like, he now has these spider cameras all over the city, and it's attached to his smartphone, and he just flips through, you know, that's instead of going on patrol, but it's like, so you're saying he was smarter than Peter Parker all this time?
But I think it's also showing the antithesis of that of, you know, Peter Parker's, you know, constant saving grace was the mantra from Uncle Ben of with great power comes great responsibility, whereas we're seeing with Doc Ock's personality that absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right.
So he's got the power, he's got the ability to, you know, to do these things,
and more importantly,
and he's letting it go to his head, and not really keeping himself in check. You know,
right.
he's being overly rational and overly logical about it,
mm-hmm.
and not really seeing the forest through the trees.
Then, screw. Anyway,
and this is all said from someone who's not even reading the books.
Right, right. Don't put your Doc Ock in my Spider-Man. You know, I mean,
yes. That's a formula that even Reese is trying to stay away from.
So, and again, and it's just, but it's also just another publicity stunt, and it's just to
it's
just to get people to buy books.
And it's going to get rectified and retconned at some point in the future, and go back.
Yeah,
to
but I mean, I also kind of think you have a core comic book audience who love the characters, love the stories, and it's just, you know, do right by them. Don't worry about, you know, oh, let's put this out, we'll sell a million copies of this issue, because what good is it if you can't keep that going then with the next issue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, definitely Superior Spider-Man, I'm sure number one sold a lot of copies because it was number one.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a continuation of the same story. You know, they just changed the title because now they've killed off Peter Parker and made Doc Ock.
I would have loved to have been in the room when they actually pitched that. Yeah, we've got this great character that everybody's loved for a long time. So, to sell more books, first let's kill him.
Right.
Well, no, because
then we'll replace him with his greatest enemy.
Because Bendis already did it in Ultimate Spider-Man. He'd already killed off Peter Parker and replaced him with someone else.
Right.
And guess what? Those issues sold really well. So
yeah.
It's like, let's just do that in the main continuity.
Yeah, but at least that was a completely separate character. Like, they didn't try to do some weird mind swap thing there. You know, the new Ultimate Spider-Man is no longer Peter Parker. There's no secret there. He's, you know, this new guy, Miles Morales, and he's, you know, doing his own thing under, you know, Nick Fury's guidance.
Right. So, I guess, in my mind anyway, Superior Spider-Man sucks.
Yeah. But I think, and that's, you know, to the conversation we were having before about too many titles, you know, Spider-Man is still guilty of that, because, you know, you have that Superior Spider-Man line going on now. They've discontinued Amazing Spider-Man for right. now. But there's also this other title called Avenging Spider-Man, which is, I think is...
His tie into the Avengers.
Right. But I don't know, is that him? I think that's actually a different character. I think that's, I want to say that that's sort of a reformed Kane, which is essentially the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider, you know, what that had become over time.
Oh, okay. So I actually have not read that title.
No? I haven't read it either, but I read bits about it.
Bits about it. Well, there you go. That's all you need are the bits.
Sometimes. But yeah, I want to say that it's a team up of him and Red Hulk and some other questionable characters in sort of a, you know, a dark new Avengers team.
Oh, because that'll end well. That'll write its own script.
Yeah.
And then the Red Hulk stabs them all in the back. Huh, who would have thunk?
That will shoot them with his giant gun.
I don't know, I'll have to look at it, because I don't see anything here where it's saying it's a different character. Oh wait, Red Hulk, Hawkeye, Captain America, Daredevil, She-Hulk.
We've decided to have a laptop in the room with us because of
so
the sheer amount of knowledge.
Forget everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, this article, I'll look and see if I can find information. It doesn't really say it's a different character or not.
So, I have some reading homework for you guys, by the way.
Uh-oh.
There is an article on Cracked called The Five Ugly Lessons Hiding in Every Superhero Movie.
Okay.
And it's interesting. It shines a little reality onto, you know, stuff like, you know, why is Batman always sitting there right when the crime happens? Mm. You know.
He's just very lucky.
He's very intelligent, and he knows exactly where to be.
And there are all the bat bots that are around that are tied into his cell phone and his bat's phone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's Doc Ock doing that. So
I think we can move on.
See, I thought he was going to say, I have an article about crack I want you to read. you know, I promise, John, I'll come back.
No, I saved that for next week. All
right. So, the question du jour.
Yes.
We kind of danced around this a little bit so far. We've talked about...
Well, we talked about, the Avengers 2 and the introduction of new characters and how they've stated that they're going to introduce Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. And and they've also talked about making a Doctor Strange movie as part of Phase 2. So that begs the question, you know, how will they work magic into this otherwise magic-free Marvel Universe that they've established?
I mean, using magic.
the
question answered. Done.
Thank you.
He avoided the
mythology of it.
And Iron Man 3, you know...
Well, wait,
we have movie magic, but we don't have...
Loki used something that appeared to be magic, but they sort of explained around that within the first Thor movie and how it was...
High technology.
Any technology high enough is indistinguishable from magic.
Yes, because if your incantation takes less than 15 words, it's definitely not magic, it's high technology. You remember all the weird incantations from the Doctor Strange? There was the Doctor Strange cartoons, the live-action one that was kind of weird. Then there was a movie.
But that's all canon from the comic books. I mean, that's what
he
does.
He's a master of the arcane arts. Yeah, he was. And that's another thing that even Fox skirted around with Doctor Doom in the Fantastic Four renditions they did, because Dr. Doom was always known to be not only have a lot of, you know, emerging technology, but also be a master of arcane arts.
Yeah, but they kind of said, no, he's kind of high-tech.
Right, they made him high-tech instead of being, you know, both high-tech and magic. You know?
And, right, I mean, Scarlet Witch, you can make the argument that it's, she's a mutant, and it's her mutant ability to alter reality or alter perceptions.
Yeah, and I think I would tend to believe that for Avengers 2, if they're not going to have Doctor Strange in it, which I don't think they'll have that movie out by then.
Right.
it won't be magic so much as it will be perceptual manipulation.
Right.
I don't think they'll go full reality manipulation the way that Scarlet Witch is capable of in the comics, because I think that that's a step too far.
Yeah. But, you know, flip that around, Doctor Strange...
Yeah, Doctor Strange is skirting that.
The mystic arts. I mean, it's all magic. You can't bring Doctor Strange in and go, yeah, he doesn't really use magic. He kind of has this, like, cell phone and all these nanobots.
He channels all these alternate universal dark energy and matter capabilities. No, I don't know. Yeah, obviously they're going to have to hit that one head on in that particular title. And somehow justify and explain its existence and place within this new Marvel universe. And I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be tricky.
It'll be a challenge. And do you think the audience would accept it?
I think that's, here's where I see it, is I think that in the context of a Doctor Strange movie, the audience will accept that because it's a Doctor Strange movie.
Right.
But once you tread into the territory of blending those things, of having Doctor Strange be, say, part of the Avengers team and wielding magic alongside Tony Stark's technology and all these other things, mm-hmm. it's going to feel a little bit more out of place. And I'm not sure how that's going to play.
Why do you think it's going to be so much of a problem, though? It's just another hero with certain powers and... You know, granted, with magic, if you think about it, if you were strategic about it, if you could wield magic, you could take anybody down.
That's fair, but I guess my concern is that if they don't address it, if they just throw Doctor Strange in with the X-Men without any of them showing some level of astonishment or incredulity and addressing those concerns, like how does this even work?
Without being sitting there,
especially with someone like Tony Stark, who is a genius and as a wielder of all these different technologies, he's going to question these things. And if they don't depict that in the movie, it's gonna lose a level of credibility.
Right.
True.
And I think it's interesting is they've done it actually in the cartoons, you know, where like. Some of the Spider-Man cartoons that have Doctor Strange in it,
and Spider-Man was very incredulous over the Arcane Arts as well. Like he thought it was all just mirrors.
And Iron Fist was well aware of it because he was connected with the mystic side of things.
But actually, along lines of that is, traditionally, Doctor Strange wasn't in the Avengers. He was in another team. Yeah. Not as well known. One of my favorite comic books. The Defenders.
That's right.
Defenders of the Earth.
It's just called the Defenders, and the roster changed a lot throughout the years. Let me see. Right here, this says what the original incarnation was: Doctor Strange, Hulk, Namor, Silver Surfer. Which.
Oh my God!
Right now, Marvel owns the rights. To those characters.
Most of those characters.
Those are all the recluses or
not
bad attitudes
Surfer.
Of the Marvel Universe.
Silver Surfer is part of the Fantastic Four stuff, which is still out of their control.
Oh, that's right, sorry. No, that's true. And I think Valkyrie was in the Defenders at one point, and a couple other ones.
And the Thor.
Right, and the thing with the Defenders is they always dealt with the oddball threats to the Earth.
Yeah.
You know, something that's in another realm... that Doctor Strange sees coming, that's this weird magical thing, you know, they dealt with it. It was all the oddball, really weird stories. That's why I liked it. So it's kind of like, you know...
So you're saying you're an oddball.
I am an oddball. So if they could get a, you know, they could, in a sense, not deal with the, oh, let's bring magic into our Avengers... But let's do it in the Defenders.
That's feasible.
You know, I mean, but
if they want to expand and grow the Marvel Universe that way, that's
right.
I guess. I mean, they are doing the Guardians of the Galaxy movie as another thing that may never tie into the Avengers line at all. So yeah, I guess that's feasible that they could have that separate line and that separate parallel that doesn't necessarily have to cross over.
Right, you can say it exists in the same world. Right, but
I'd love to see Thor square up against a squirrel. Or whatever that thing is.
That's true. But, well, you mean Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes.
A raccoon?
Yeah, raccoon, yes. That's right. Rocky, yeah. It's Rocky and Bullwinkle.
To square off against Squirrel, you'd have to go to the DC Universe.
That's right. Yeah, the Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Who could? He could pull some stuff. That was one angry squirrel.
Angry squirrel.
Yes. Squirrels, DC, raccoons, Marvel.
There's a squirrel girl, though, in the Marvel Universe. Squirrel Girl. Who's been teamed up in various weird places.
Yeah.
She's definitely like D-list Marvel character.
She's almost, you know, Howard the Duck.
Yeah, pretty close to that.
Howard the Duck, you're bragging about.
Oh, of course, you can't.
She's been involved with Deadpool before.
Okay.
Deadpool type.
Yeah. I can't say I've ever read anything with her in it. I've seen plenty of images of her online. I've read, you know, there's plenty of memes I think I've seen where they've used the character, but...
Well, she's not a particularly useful character.
No.
Necessarily.
Sorry to all you Squirrel Girl fans out there, but yeah, no. So yeah, I mean, back to the story hand. I mean, that's one way they can handle it is split it off. I do think it would be an interesting thing in the Avengers movie, or even in the Doctor Strange movie. You have Tony Stark or someone like Tony in there, where it's like, you know, how do you do this? There's no such thing as magic, and he's like, well, no, there is. And here's how it works, you know, and they could. To bring it in, like, it's a thing, it exists, you just haven't dealt with it yet, you know?
Yeah, I just think it's gonna be, it's something they're going to have to really think about how they're gonna handle it, because I don't think it's, you know, like with Thor, they were very careful about how they introduced the idea of Asgard and these other realms,
right.
and dissociating it with the common alignment of actually being these, you know, like the godly realms that they are in mythology, but rather being, you know, physical other dimensions of space or parts of our universe that are traversable, you know, via these, you know, these wormholes.
You notice, though, something they've never touched on, they've just completely avoided it, is the, like you just said, the mythology of Thor. No one's like, wait a minute, you're that guy I learned about in school?
They did talk about that, though, in the first Thor movie, because it was, I forget what the guy's name was, the older scientist who was working with Jane Foster, had shown her a book that he got from the library that had these, you know, depictions of Thor and Loki and these characters as, you know, Norse gods.
Hmm, okay. You're right, they did. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's... Unfortunately, Thor, I own it. I watched it in the theater. I haven't watched it since.
You're such a great Marvel fan.
No, and I'm a huge Thor fan, and I, you know...
Are you, though?
Just
for the part where he walks behind the car.
First of all, if you own the movie, first of all, you should watch it at least once.
I have two issues with that movie,
and
though.
Second of all, there's a Coulson short film on there that is worth watching.
Yeah. No, and I have watched the short film. I have two issues with the Thor movie.
Okay.
One, it really feels like it was written just to bring him into the Marvel Universe. It's not a strong story. It's just like, here's Thor, boom, and here's Loki, boom. Now these guys will have a more important role come the Avengers movie.
Sure, and I guess it is. It does serve that purpose, but I think they actually did make a story of it. I think one of the things that... And we've talked about this before of the, you know, the pathos and character building nature of, you know, what makes some, you know, superhero movies successful. You know, Thor came into that as this brash, you know, pig-headed kind of character,
right.
And was stripped of his mantle and thrown out of Asgard, and there was this character building arc that he had, where by the end of it, yes, he got all those abilities back and his hammer back and all that, but he was not the same person.
It was his origin
at the
story.
End of that. It was exactly
right.
It was his origin story of how he became more than just the son of Odin, but how he became Thor, a hero and defender of man.
I guess my issue really is that Loki, I think, should have been in the story, but not been the main villain in that one.
Well, he was and he wasn't. I mean, he was sort of the one, you know, who was responsible for a lot of these events. But, you know, the main protagonists really were the Frost Giants for the first part of that story.
Right.
And even towards the end where they were trying to kill off Odin. But it was all part of his ploy.
And then my second issue, and everyone can say that I'm wrong on this one.
I'm ready.
Is the changing of how Thor speaks.
No these and thous.
No these, thou, thous. No Shakespearean type speaking. It was a lot more just plain English, you know.
He does some of that. It was definitely muted. It wasn't as prevalent as you see it in the comic books.
Yes.
But there was some of that. And even Tony Stark made fun of that to a degree in the Avengers with their little fight scene in the woods. You know, like, you know, is this, you know, Shakespeare in the park? You know.
Yeah,
but I mean, it wasn't, I don't think it was...
It wasn't, you're right, it wasn't as...
And to me, the joke didn't, it wasn't as funny
as it was in
when he...
Comics.
To me, the joke wasn't as funny then. Like, if it was as pronounced as it is in the comics, as it was in the movie, then it would have been like, okay, now it's funny, that's a gut buster. But now when it's like, you're a little more proper when you speak, you're not...
So you have that issue, and not the issue that everyone in Asgard speaks British English in a dimension light years away from Earth.
Well, everybody speaks British English in Doctor Who, so, you know, if it's...
But there's explanation for that. There's technological explanation for that. In Doctor Who, you know, you don't know what the Doctor speaks. The Doctor speaks, and we hear British English.
Yeah.
The TARDIS translates everything. Like, even the signage that is on alien planets reads as English because of the TARDIS, from the perspective of the companion.
But... No, you're right. I mean, that was like,
why does the people in Asgard
speak English? Why does? Yes.
Apparently better than you.
I speak good English. I have my edumacation.
You're a demigod too.
But yeah, so you didn't know that? That's why I have the long blonde hair. I mean, come on.
I wasn't going to expect them to introduce these characters and have them speak some foreign alien language and have to learn English, you know, it would have made the movie so cumbersome. But at the same time, it is sort of a, you know, one of those, you know, it's a plot hole.
Well, let's put it this way: the original Thor storyline in the comics is he was the outcast, sent down, you know, and then he finds his hammer, and he turns into Dr. Blake, and goes back and forth between Blake and Thor.
Right,
and
the transformation.
And the transformation. And then Thor wasn't published for a while, and they brought Thor back into the comic world, and they got rid of the whole secret identity thing with him. And, you know, now it's just he's the defender of Midgar, which is Earth. And, you know, that's why he comes, and he enjoys this planet. And, okay, but... They tried to mix both those origins as well in the story. You know, his father threw the hammer to Earth,
right,
you know, because he was angry at him, and it's like, okay, but that's the original storyline. And then, you know, he liked what was going on. But actually, no, they didn't even really touch on that as much. He fell in love with a human, but
And as a result, had an affinity for Midgard in general because of that journey.
Right, but in the Avengers...
Looking at her, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing he went back.
I'm sure he would have been turned on twice as fast if you were carrying a phaser.
Oh, God. You know, don't you mean a lightsaber?
No, she never carried a lightsaber.
Patty?
No, she had
a blaster pistol.
Blaster pistol. I'm sorry.
Please don't our cannons together. You know, we have enough confused nerds out there as it is.
Yeah. You want to be really confused? Look at the He-She for Thor.
So,
if you don't know what He-She is, it's howitshouldhaveended.com.
You know, I'm actually looking forward to the Dark World, though. I think it should be a stronger movie. We're not going to deal with Loki this time. He's going to be more.
He's
going to be more of the.
He's going to be a
more of the
dark
Hannibal.
Ally.
He's going to be more of the Hannibal Lecter type character. Put the lotion in the basket. But I think, you know, and I think it'll work. I'm hoping it'll work.
Yeah.
So anyway, wow, this was.
Yeah, we're running
low. We beat the magic issue to death here.
Our next episode will be just me ranting for an hour.
Yeah, I think we need to save all the rest of our topic points.
No, we don't.
Haven't even gone on to the Superman, lives. The new Superman trailer.
No,
they didn't destroy Krypton.
No, well, we've beat Man of Steel to death on this show.
We're saving any further Man of Steel discussions. We'll wait till the movie.
Then why did they take Ritalin this morning? I was ready for the rant.
All right, so boys and girls, for now I will say this is Dave for Superhero Speak, signing off, and don't let your cape be caught in the door.